Courtside at the Virtual Hardwood, it's the NLSC Podcast, episode number 271. I'm Andrew, with you as always, with me as always, and well, certainly most of the time anyway, it's Ben, also known as Arcane.
Hey everyone.
Another week, Ben, another week of a few interesting happenings in the basketball gaming world. A few things to talk about this week, and some of it's good news, I guess. Some of it, maybe not so promising.
Yeah, definitely a few little interesting topics to talk about this week.
So let's get right into it, and I guess the biggest news this week, Ben, is that NBA 2K, Visual Concepts, Take-Two, of course, have renewed their deal with the NBA, that is the licensing agreement, of course, to continue to produce a licensed NBA game, and it's supposedly in the realm of about $1.1 billion, which is significantly more, I think even perhaps double, according to report on Pasta Padre, more than double their previous agreement. So that's a lot of money to have the NBA license. But then again, 2K has been a license through print money these past few years, or I guess going on about a decade now.
Yeah, well, the Nike contract was $1 billion, and that was 8 years.
And this contract, yeah, this is 7 years that they have extended that for. No surprises, of course, that they have renewed their agreement. 2K has been working very closely with the league, obviously not just on the game itself, the Wii buy, but also the new NBA 2K League, which will be tipping off its second season, I guess, fairly soon?
Yeah, they've been kind of quiet about it, haven't they?
Yeah, I haven't heard the exact date, but based on last year, I'm guessing it's going to be around about the same time this year. But obviously, again, 2K being that moneymaker for both Take-Two, the company, the developer, Visual Concepts, etc., and the NBA itself, no surprise that they've renewed. So NBA 2K is going to be produced for years to come. No surprise there. But what people are discussing is what it means for the basketball gaming landscape more broadly. And there's obviously been speculation about NBA Live, because EA also needs to pay their licensing fees for the NBA, and people have questioned, well, is this going to be the asking price? Is that going to price things out of it? Obviously, EA has the money, but whether they want to invest that money in a brand that has not been doing so well for, again, over a decade now, or around, or thereabouts. And there are people who are predicting doom and gloom, but personally, I'm not so sure.
I'm a little bit skeptical. Like, I don't know if they will. And a lot of it, take, for example, the situation that's happened with Activision recently. Some of their games haven't been selling well. They've gone through three CFOs just recently. And they just cut their ties with Bungie and the Destiny project and that. So I could see them not doing it. Like, if it's going to cost them that much, and given their current rate in sales and that the last few years, I could definitely see it in them not extending the contract, because the shareholders wouldn't see the viable profit from it, and it's not making enough money. So I could see the shareholders wanting out of that project.
I mean, there is that, and there's a topic which we'll come back to actually next week, because the docket's kind of full. Clean Prince Gaming had a very informative, great video on why the NBA Street Series died, and the other Street Series with that EA Big was doing years ago, and pointed out that, and of course, again, want to come back to that, because talk about Street and a bit more of that situation. But one of the things that he pointed out was that over the years, EA's strategy has become very conservative as far as just going for the safe titles, not so much creativity and passion projects and things like that, but just going for sequels that will definitely sell and make money. So with that in mind, with Live definitely not having the success that I'm sure the company would like, yeah, I mean, I can see that point of view, and nothing is too big to fail. And we've seen Live cancelled a couple of times with the NBA Elite 11 and NBA Live 13, of course. So yeah, it's happened. I can see, but at the same time, I think the history, they're still investing. They've, through all the hardships, they're still trying to make something of it. So I think the NBA license is too important for them to let it slip. Like, even if they let Live go and they brought back Street, or they brought back Jam or something like that that they knew would sell, or if they rebrand Live as something else and were taking it in a new direction, as they're kind of trying to at the moment, I don't know. I think they want to keep doing it. It also depends whether that is the fee that they're going to be charged, because EA does have a very long working relationship with the NBA going back to the 80s, obviously, over 30 years now. So, yeah. I mean, maybe maybe that counts for something. If this is based on 2K's sales, I mean, 2K must be making some fantastic profits off 2K. Take-Two making some fantastic profits off NBA 2K in the last decade or so, especially. Not just the recurrent revenue, of course, that we've so much talked about so much in previous shows, but simply the amount of sales. It could just be that the NBA is saying, hey, we want a bigger cut, and we're getting that bigger cut through the licensing deal. You know, if you want to make money off our license, then we want you to spend a little bit more on it. Maybe it's a different... They can negotiate that bigger deal because 2K is making that extra money. And I think, as we were talking about it before the show, it depends when EA's contract is up with the NBA license. I mean, if they've got a couple more years on it, then it's probably not going to be an issue for at least a couple of years.
Yeah. I think too, I think that going into next gen, if they don't hit it out of the park, and if they end up basically doing like a live 14 again, I think that's when we could also potentially see, you know, the end of the franchise in that sort of sense. I think they're good. It's good that they've invested more in the studio with the expansion with the Madrid team.
Yep.
But it's really got to pay off in the next 2 years, really. I think we'll get... I think Live 2021, whatever they're going to call it, will be potentially this first next real next-gen title. I think I think that's when we'll probably really get it. I don't know if there'll be... Like, if Live 2020 will be... No, definitely not. Because that'll be this year, wouldn't it? So, yeah, I think 2021, the Live 21 title would be the first potential really next gen, and they really have to hit that out of the park. They basically have to do like what 2K did with the OMG sort of reveal and all that stuff. They need to wow us like that.
Well, there can't be another rebuild, basically.
No,
and we've compared NBA Live to a rebuilding NBA team before, and people and that comparison is still very apt, I feel. And it's gotten to the point where we've had a few years of rebuilding, and now the impatience sets in. Like, at first 2 or 3 years of a rebuilding phase, you're like, okay, yes, we need to suffer through some hardships. We need to, again, to extend the metaphor, to stockpile some draft picks, to get some good players, see if you can lure a couple of good veterans, or even a star, if a star is willing to come be part of a rebuilding project. You know, you've got a little bit of patience from the fans. But once you get to that 5 or 6 year mark and it still hasn't really made much progress, it gets harder to borrow the common phrase, to trust the process.
Yeah, I agree. You know, yes, there's been little steps, but it's starting to get to the point where it's not been enough. And I mean, there's a sense that the one is too much the focus and not the rest of the game, and I think that's going to hurt in the long run.
It definitely is, and we'll get to that more in a little bit. But as far as NBA 2K goes, I mean, this is great for them. They've locked it up for the long term. They've got obviously paying a lot of money. I think they can definitely afford it because of the money that 2K has been making. It also suggests that the NBA is in that partnership for the long haul, which probably means things like the NBA 2K League they're also heavily invested in that. And while that has its problems with both issues with the game itself and also selling it, I mean, I think that's going to be the other thing as 2K tries to become this overall brand, whether that makes it, whether it takes too much focus away from the game or the traditional experience of the game. I mean, we've discussed at length before how we feel like sometimes the online stuff interferes with the offline game.
Yep.
And certainly with the focus on the 2K League, I thought that really hurt 2K18 last year. Yep. and the way they've done that. And seeing some of the reactions to the 2K League, like, it's by no means a failure because people are tuning in. It's working. It hasn't gone belly up in a year or anything like that. So it's definitely not a bust. But at the same time, you look at the reaction when the stuff was being posted on the NBA Facebook and everything. People are saying, what is this garbage? Why are we watching this? This isn't NBA stuff. Make a separate page.
These guys aren't athletes.
Yeah, so there's still that stigma around esports in general that you've got to be careful how you push that. And I think trying to push it too hard on the main NBA channels is working against the league, because it's funny, the core audience, you would think, are people like you and myself, you know, and other hardcore basketball gamers that want to watch this, like, oh yes, let's watch other people play basketball, but that's not really there. It's not really getting the casual fans or the NBA fans, because the NBA fans want to watch real basketball, and the gamers want to play a video game. So it's being hard to, it's hard to really appeal to those two fan bases. And I know there's a lot of overlap there, obviously, but not enough, I think, to really push it. But clearly, with this extension, of course, they want the games to continue and are willing to work with them. So I think they're going to keep trying ventures like the NBA 2K League. So with that being said, it's an awful lot of money, whether it's real or virtual currency, $1 billion, $1.1 billion, certainly a lot of currency to have either way. And we'll see if anything comes of that and what it may mean for the future of basketball gaming. But if nothing else, I really hope it doesn't result in a monopoly, virtual or otherwise, or effective monopoly. I mean, as Pastor Padre points out, with the lack of, through market domination alone, 2K's almost had a pseudo-exclusive deal with the NBA. Obviously, they haven't, because there's been other NBA games live and now Playgrounds, although Playgrounds is under the 2K banner now. But with that kind of money, and if that sets the price and EA's not willing to pay that much, then it could end up being an exclusive deal, effectively an exclusive deal. And we've seen what the Madden community, what the football gaming community has come with that, and even with association football, people, what feat with the whole FIFA and Pro Evolution Soccer and everything. We don't want to have that in the basketball gaming community. We need the options. We need live to be a viable option, or if not live, someone else, but live is the closest one to being that, being the other, having the history and everything and EA behind it. So, yeah, I hope that it only means good things for 2K and not bad things for live.
Yeah, I'm hopeful, and I want both games to, you know, continue, and because if we get one, and, well, we all know how that will end up going, and, you know, especially if the one keeps focusing on microtransactions and not gameplay improvements or making the game enjoyable again, then we got nothing in the end.
I think the people that say, the ones saying that live should just go away and we just have 2K, I think that they'd be the ones seeing a different tune if it actually happened and then 2K gets licensed to basically just do whatever it wants, because there's absolutely no competition or alternative at all.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think people would really regret not having that second game and the possibility of that game getting better, as opposed to just having the one game and no choice at all, because we only have to look at Madden. I mean, people still buy it, and they, because if you're into NFL, that's really your only choice. Or
yeah,
upgrade and mod an old game to it so it's new, but there's only so much you can do. The older a game gets, the more the issues of that era are very apparent, I feel. I mean, I love NBA Live 06. It's one of my all-time favorites, but I go back and play it, and yeah, there's definitely things from that PS2 era that the tech just wasn't there to do some of the things the current games are doing. So if you can get into that experience and you want that simpler experience, it's fine. I'm not saying that you're wrong if you prefer that experience, but having current games that have taken things further, I miss having those newer features in older games, and it is harder, the more years pass, to go back to those older games, at least in my experience.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the aging look of it, there's even a lot of sort of even mechanic elements to it, is definitely doesn't make it as enjoyable to go back to, like, especially, let's say, for instance, things like physics and animation stuff, it can look a little bit more clunky compared to what used to playing now in terms of things. So
modes and features, you've got the career, career, deeper franchise mode with My League, My Career, all the online stuff, things like that. There's just less to play.
Oh, for sure.
So continuing the conversation about Live's future and what it needs to do and how we feel about whether it's on track. Obviously, we're doing the wish list at the moment, and we encourage everybody to get their wishes in as soon as possible. We do want to get it in by the end of January for both Live and 2K, so the quicker we can get a comprehensive list, the better. And I feel it really is important to speak up, because without it, the developers don't know what we want and don't know whether their roadmap gels with where we want the series to go. And to that point, there was a recent poll or a survey on Reddit, the official NBA Live Reddit, and the question was, which game mode do you play the most, or one of the questions, and the answers were, Ben, the one, the league, the one, the streets, court battles, live run, live events, or other. Now, you may be noticing there's a couple of options missing there, Ben, that I guess are under other, but really not being pushed there.
Yeah, which is a bit concerning. You know, the game is technically a bit deeper than that. So to kind of limit it to three or four other modes and to just other is pretty disappointing in that sense. I don't know if Reddit had a limit of, like, if it's a poll sort of thing. I don't know if it has a limit on the amount of options you can put for it. Like, Twitter has about four.
That's right. That's always a possibility. But, I mean, the main thing is that it hasn't mentioned the Ultimate Team or Franchise Mode. And this,
or the WNBA.
Or even the WNBA and whether people want to see that expanded upon. I mean, they're assuming, I guess, that those are the most popular. That's probably what the metrics say, the telemetry data says. This comes courtesy of the NBA Live Brazil Twitter account, that is the fan account. And they just noted this and said that they have high hopes for NBA Live 20, but please don't turn the back on Franchise and everything. And you actually look at the NBA Live Reddit, and there's a lot of people talking about Franchise Mode. So this whole idea that Franchise Mode is only for old heads, and I've really come to hate that, Ben. I've really come to believe that whenever somebody uses that word, it's basically a way of dismissing an old person's opinion or an older person's opinion. You know, when I say old person, I mean, in a community like ours, us in our 30s, we certainly qualify as old heads, you know, having been around for decades and being a bit older than maybe the average age of gamers, of the core demographic. So it's you see it in all kinds of things, of making fun of the old heads, talking about the greatest of all time debate, things like that. And it's really become this very snarky, snobby way of dismissing it. And it's funny because, I mean, we've got a lot of ways that we could dismiss the young people's opinions about being cranky, maybe needing their nap, maybe, oh, they just... Certainly does get upsetting when your mum doesn't get the right cereal, isn't it? That's why you're cranky. I mean, we can be snarky too, and we've had more years to build up bitterness and snark, so...
Oh, yeah.
If you want to go toe-to-toe with us on that one. But, nevertheless, you see this interest being expressed on the Reddit, on the NBA Live Reddit. People are interested in Franchise, and there is that self-fulfilling prophecy where they're saying, well, no one's playing Franchise, so it means no one's interested in it, but people would be playing it if it was better. So you get that catch-22 that it's not being improved unless people are playing it, but people aren't going to play it unless it improves. And so it just goes around in this vicious cycle. And I think we can also get into that vicious cycle ourselves of saying, well, they're not going to do anything about it, so we're not going to speak out on it. And then, of course, we don't speak out on it, so nothing happens. So we just keep getting into these vicious cycles and these catch-22s over and over again. So I think it is important that we do speak up and speak out with the wish lists. But you know, Ben, I see something like this, I can't help but feel a little bit dismayed, a little bit discouraged about the future of the game, that it's pushing these modes, which they should do. I mean, the game needs to be well-rounded and have all kinds of stuff, just as 2K does. But that's the thing, it needs to be well-rounded, and that includes a deeper Ultimate Team and Franchise. They really haven't had the work that needs to be put into them the last few years. The official NBA Live Twitter spends more time pushing the mobile game than Ultimate Team. You know, which is crazy, because Ultimate Team does have microtransactions, so they could actually be making the all-important recurrent revenue from the Ultimate Team. It's the only mode in the game that has the microtransactions, as far as I'm aware. There's nothing when you can't buy reward points, can you?
No.
In the one?
No. Everything in the one is and not bought.
Yeah, so you're not even buying loot crates in the one. So the only way that they make recurrent revenue is through Ultimate Team. And I suppose you could say, well, it's nice they're not pushing the mode that has the recurrent revenue, as 2K does with all their modes that make recurrent revenue. But at the same time, you know, the Ultimate Team is a really fun mode. I know it's not really your thing, the kind of mode, but it's a lot of people do enjoy it across the EA brand, and of course in my team as well, in 2K. And certainly Franchise, again, so many threads I just looked through before we started recording on Reddit, asking about Franchise mode, saying we want it to be better, and is it this and that. So people are interested in the mode, and they want to see it get better, and they want to play it. So I know you want to try new things, but it feels like they're too conservative about not going back and looking at great ideas. And people say, oh, well, you can't look at the past, but those things made Live the brand leader back in the day.
And yeah, the game was so robust. And
yeah, and they make 2K the brand leader now. And it's the things that people are interested in, and it's the bare necessities you need for a basketball video game, an NBA licensed video game in 2019. and Live has them, but not with the depth that it's actually worth having. You definitely don't want to strip them out, but they've got to get better. And I hate to see it left out of a poll and not being talked about, these other modes, because... And people are saying, it's like when we said for years we need roster editing, and they're like, yep, it's next year. You know, if NBA Live 20 isn't that well-rounded product, it might be their last shot. I mean, maybe they'll have a new shot on the next generation, as you say, with NBA Live 21, 22, whenever that comes on the next gen, whenever they announce PS5 and whatever Xbox 2, Xbox 3, whatever branding they're going to go with, the next-gen systems. You know... Maybe that gives them a chance to reboot, as long as they don't completely overhaul like they did at the beginning of this generation, or with NBA Elite 11, of course. But I really feel like if they don't make a big splash with 20, that really could be it. It could be their last chance to establish themselves as something more than just a pretty good alternative, but one that's not quite complete. Because if you're a franchise gamer and you want to make that leap to Live because you like Live's gameplay, but you need something to sink your teeth into as far as the mode's concerned, and you're not getting it from franchise, you're going to say, well, I want to make the Switch, I want to play Live, but 2K's gameplay is okay enough for me, and franchise is more than okay enough for me, so I'll stick with what I know. And that's the big problem. And you can say, well, you're looking for the new crowd, but the new crowd's not making the numbers. And it's the same crowd. Live and 2K appeal to the same people, theoretically. And I know I'm treading familiar ground here, but yeah, I want to see more put into Ultimate Team and definitely franchise. Definitely the two of them. So to see something like that, it gets me a little worried too. I agree with NBA Live Brazil on this one.
Yeah, I mean, as you stated, you know, if this new crowd that they're focusing on isn't producing the numbers in terms of sales, then what's the point of basically ignoring the old crowd, I suppose, which would basically double at least the potential sale numbers in that. So yeah, I think put the priority is wrong in terms of that, if they are trying to chase that new wave of new crowd, because like we've seen in recent years, there's the sale numbers aren't there. So I think and yeah, in result, the other modes get left out, the game technically becomes more bare bones, and people will go, well, why am I spending $60 or $30 or depending what they're going to do, because I'm sure they don't want to sell the game at $30 forever.
No.
You know, they don't want to keep doing that. You know, they want to make a full price game again that, you know, justifies
the price tag, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that we do see that comment quite a bit on social media, on Reddit, sometimes now forum as well, or over on OS. People saying that it's a pretty good game, but not for that much, because that for a full price game, you do expect that robust franchise mode, the card collecting, team building mode, and the career mode. At the moment, you've got the career mode, which is pretty solid, pretty robust. You've got the Pro-Am Tour and the street stuff, really, really good hook, but there's not enough NBA content in NBA Live, the whole franchise and Ultimate Team and the Legends Outside and all the little content that really makes, that has made 2K as expansive an experience as it has. You know, 2K, I don't like what they do with the microtransactions. I think that pushes it too far. And doing little things like, remember how they had the pre-order bonus? Previous years, the pre-order bonus, anybody could play early, but this year it was only the most expensive edition?
Yep.
Like, things like that, I don't like what the 2K is doing there. I think it's absolutely lacking in goodwill. And I think the fact that they already have such a market advantage already, it's even worse, even more anti-consumer that they're doing that. But I will say that everything that's included in 2K for the experience you get and all the content and everything, sometimes more content than you can actually, any one person can really handle in the space of 12 months before the next game comes out, it does live up to the price tag. And certainly if you enjoy the gameplay in at least one mode, then it will keep you satisfied for at least 12 months. Not so much last year, we all got a bit burned out on it. But in the normal sense, 2K does justify its price tag. Live at the moment, without those extra robust modes and that fully rounded product, like you say, it's people are saying, I'd pay $15, $20, $25, $30 for this, but $60 or, you know, $80 upwards in Australian currency, for example, people are less likely.
Yeah. You know, it can't be like Fallout 76 in terms of the amount of content.
Mm.
It's definitely got to be far deeper. And, yeah, and even with, like, say for example with 2K, you know, their bubble could potentially burst with regards to current, you know, their current revenue stuff. I think you'll get a point where people will have enough and just go no. So I think it's a short term strategy. I don't think it has a long term strategy that will, you know, give them the financial success that they're after. I think just in the end, it will burn out people just having to spend $60 plus another $60 just to
every year.
Enjoy. Yeah,
and that's the thing, is other games can get away with it, but when you're also putting out a new base game every year as well, maybe it ends up going to a subscription model. It depends how things go with the gaming industry. I mean, obviously 2K are following trends here. They're not setting them as far as DLC and recurrent revenue. But the thing is, even if you said, okay, I'm not doing it, I'm not going to pay for anything. And look, I will say that I've had a pretty fun experience grinding up my player. I mean, it seemed a bit tedious at times, but I'm currently at 91 overall, having not spent a single cent this year. And I feel very accomplished having done that. And I'm currently in the first round of the playoffs, so it's not like I've had to play 6 years to actually get, six seasons worth to get it. And the fact that I also picked a smaller contract stupidly at the start in exchange for a bigger multiplier in the cap breaker means that I'd set myself back even more. So there's people who would have hit 90 overall much quicker than I did. So, I mean, it is possible, and I have enjoyed the offline experience this year. And that's the thing, even if you take out all the recurrent revenue garbage in 2K, if you said, okay, if the bubble bursts on that and it's just all about that core experience, 2K has still got a whole lot of stuff through the career mode and franchise, two different franchise modes, in fact, including playoffs as well. You know, all these staple modes, roster editing, My League, My GM, roster editing, My Career, My Team.
The content creation stuff you can do with, you know, shoes, jerseys, courts, and all that stuff within the modes adds an extra element of depth and fun in terms of, you know, something extra to do. And
yeah, I mean,
and makes you feel people get to feel creative.
There's so many small details as well as the big stuff that really makes 2K appealing. And here people who think that we're live fanboys scratching their heads at why we're complimenting 2K like this. But the fact of the matter is, for all our quibbles with 2K, we have been very drawn in by it in recent years and played a lot of it. And because there has been so much to play, so much to sink our teeth into. And even something like Live, for example, they went back to having metric measurements for players.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because obviously as Australians, we actually do use the metric system in day-to-day life. But when it comes to an NBA game, I want to see the Imperial system, feet and inches and pounds, because that's what they use. It's very distracting to look in the rosters and see a player listed at 201 centimeters instead of 6'7". Or trying to make, when you're trying to create a player, you've got to do the conversion. You know, it's kind of annoying. And in 2K, there's an option to switch between metric and imperial. That something like that should have been in Live 10 years ago, for example. Yeah. And they did a couple of games earlier this generation where they went back to it. But now, of course, if you're in a PAL region, it goes to the metric measurement, and it's annoying because you can't switch it easily in game. It should be an option. This should have been added in Live. Live 15, or Live 16, basically, when it came back. You know, we've mentioned that this is when it should be patched in, or this is when it should be, and that's why a lot of people are frustrated, ourselves included, is that a lot of this stuff, as we said, I think we said it last week, is that basically it's been, oh, next year, next year, next year.
Yep.
And you keep saying that year after year, people are going to lose the faith. I think getting roster editing patched in last year did restore my faith a lot, in that they're listening to that kind of stuff. And I mean, here I am saying all this stuff. I definitely want us to speak out in the wishlist, and this is why I think it is so important for us to speak out in the wishlist, to make let our voices be heard with this, because if we just got to grumble to ourselves and don't say, look, you really need this, this is what people want, look at all this interest in it, you know, they can only ignore that for so long, and in conjunction with the sales numbers and the Metacritic scores, before they say, okay, maybe we should listen to this. Maybe there's something to expanding these other modes, because there is genuine interest in them. So we do need to speak out. But it is hard not to get a little bit discouraged at times, especially when you see something like this poll, and you don't want to read too much into it, but at the same time, you can't help but read something into it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is a shame. Because, yeah, the game used to be so innovative, and now it's not.
And there was a time when, doing my retrospectives of Live for the 20th anniversary, I guess we're, at this point, I could probably make it the 25th anniversary this year, actually, 2019 to back to 94. So I do want to get back to those retrospectives, actually. But the point is, going through all of them in the early years, year to year, there were some really big jumps in features and such. Not so much 95 to 97, because the technology really wasn't there. But once we got to about 98 to around about the mid-2000s, the stuff they would put in each year, it was quite impressive. Like, that made some really huge leaps. And Live has, in some respects, and they definitely need to continue to polish the gameplay, because gameplay is paramount, as we've said so many times before. But without this extra stuff, we've seen the results. It set them back when they launched Live 06 on Xbox 360 without franchise mode, without dynasty mode. It set them back in Live 14 and trying to change things around in Elite 11. I think the proof is right there that it needs to be that well-rounded product, not just feeling good on the virtual hardware, but also giving people something that they can really get invested in. Because if you don't get invested, you stop playing it after a few months.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there was a lot of burnout with 2K last year because of, you know, how poor it was in a lot of ways, and you know, people were finishing the game, like, not stop playing around December when the game, you know, just after the game released and that. So yeah, it was, you know, both games are capable of, you know, dropping off, you know, it's monthly users and all that stuff, just at basically at a whim, in a sense, because if the game's not good enough, or things aren't being added, or in terms of
new content,
the game just dries up faster than some of the games like Sea of Thieves and the stuff like that. And it's one of the downsides of a game of service and stuff, is that it means that they have elements of it being kind of empty at first, and then you got to build up with new content all the time. So yeah.
And it's definitely not EA that are doing it. We saw something similar with Street Fighter, that they patched in the campaign mode and things like that. Street Fighter V, yeah. I believe, or one of the ones. I don't follow the series as close enough to really... I may have that wrong, but I know at least one of them, they were patching the single-player campaign after post-release. So
I know that they recently just started doing some in-game advertising.
I mean, that's something that we've seen at the moment, 2K, that we see during the pre-game studio show and everything. There's actually a GameStop promo at the moment for discounts on VC, which is kind of obnoxious, but at the same time, you do see advertisements in an NBA broadcast, so it kind of, I'm a bit desensitized to it, I have to admit. I guess that doesn't bother me as much, but you need more than the hook. The hook will catch people, but it doesn't. There's no retention there. You know, and I think a lot of the things that Live has been focusing on are hooks, really good hooks, creative. And it's the kind of things that they should be exploring to offer something a little bit different from 2K. But once you've got them in there, it's not going to hook everyone. The bait's not going to be there for everyone. So, and even those that you do hook are not necessarily going to get stuck on that, and they want to play other things. So you do need to have that full well-rounded experience, as we've said so many times before. And I do hope that this poll wasn't indicative of that they're going to continue to push other things on the back burner that have been on the back burner for far too long. I mean, I felt, for my money, Ultimate Team has taken a step backwards this year, which was really disappointing, because after I did give up on 2K18, I really got into Live 18 Ultimate Team and had a lot of fun. So not even just having that, I mean, there's nothing really in Live that's hooking me at the moment, which is really unfortunate, because I do feel the gameplay is quite good this year. But I don't really want to play another career mode. Because I wasn't going to play career mode at all this year, and then I got hooked on 2K19's my career again, grinding up the player for use online. Online is not really as much to my tastes in Live as it is with 2K with Pro Am, and with franchise and Ultimate Team not being up to scratch. What do I play? Just a bunch of play now games? That's going to get boring. You know, it's got to be more than that. So yeah, I just really hope that we are reading too much into it, and if nothing else, I think it's just goes to show that we really do need to speak up on franchise and Ultimate Team and say, yes, we definitely are interested in it, and we would be playing it if you give us a little bit more incentive. But at the moment they're unplayable. Make them at least as good as they were on prior gen, at least as good as prior gen Dynasty or Association. You know, all the My League stuff, that can wait, but at least get it up to scratch, get it up to code first, and I guarantee people will play it.
Yeah, you know, having a game, or having the modes where it's become less and less, is something of 20 years ago, and you're doing the mode disservice.
Yeah.
And you're wondering why people aren't playing it, essentially. So, yeah.
And Live was the first game, the first basketball game, to have that multi-year detailed franchise mode. It pioneered this, just as it pioneered, well, not Live so much as FIFA and such, pioneered the Ultimate Team, the card-collecting concept. So these are EA's creations, in a way. So for them to be not doing it as well as previous games or the competitors' games, it's disappointing and disheartening to see. I think it needs, and you can call us old heads and out of touch, like I said last week, as much as you like, but I think the sales speak for themselves. I think the reactions speak for themselves. There's clearly the interest and the disappointment, which suggests that this is something that can't be ignored. And here's the thing, and it's something that I've realized as I've gotten older. I mean, it is very easy to dismiss the current trends and be nostalgic for the past and get caught up in nostalgia, but and think that, yes, the old people are out of touch and it's us, the new generation and everything. But I think you do, you know, maybe you felt this too, Ben, at times, but you do realize you look back at where you were 10, 15 years ago when you were late teens, early 20s, and you're like, you know what? I still believe in a lot of the things I did, but maybe my perspective wasn't as good without that experience, you know. And now that you've been around the block a couple of times, you start to have that bit more perspective and experience that, you know, I can put forward this argument kind of thing. I know a couple of things, basically. So before we dismiss us all as old heads, you know, there's a bit of wisdom there in these old heads.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now there's just, a few things, that you think back to and go, man, I can't believe I thought that or did that kind of thing. So, and yeah, the things you tell yourself then, you know, if you ever got to sort of meet yourself.
Yeah.
And say, well, you'll be wrong about this. You'll screw up here. Learn from that and go from there.
Or if nothing else, you're kind of right about this, but you've still got a few things to learn. You don't quite have it all figured out just yet. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I still believe what you did, but I've got a little bit more perspective on the issue and understand the pros and cons or the ins and outs a little bit more. And I think that's why I feel that the older crowd shouldn't be ignored. I mean, because I do think we have some good ideas that the younger crowd will still enjoy. And I think 2K, a lot of things 2K has done is bears that out of how successful it can be. So even though I want to see Live do things its own way, you know, I just wrote the Friday Five article about this. In fact, there are things that I think it should take from 2K. And of course, spoiler, of course, 2K, next Friday Five will be things that 2K can take from Live. And people will laugh at that and say, oh, why would the brand leader take things from Live with all its struggles? But Live does have some good concepts and good ideas that 2K would benefit 2K if they did it their way. So that is the benefit of competition, to drive yourself to be better and to look at things. And as far as Live and 2K are concerned, I don't care who has the best idea first, Ben. I just want both companies to, if there's a good idea, for them to both do their take on it. That's all that matters at the end of the day. I don't care who came up with it first. As long as it's done and in the game and we're enjoying it, who cares?
Yeah. I'll second that.
So we will see what happens with that, of course, in the coming weeks and months. Once again, please get your feedback in for the wish lists as soon as possible. Once again, I've dragged my feet a little bit on that one, Ben. I will be putting it together. I want to make it as comprehensive as possible. I want to see if I can put together some supplementary materials that really highlight these points in a concise manner and send those along to both Visual Concepts and EA Sports. But everyone, if we can get that in by the end of January, so much the better. We've got another topic this week, and it actually concerns franchise gaming as well, just in case people weren't bored of that yet. But this is My League stuff, and of course My League has been such a fantastic mode for franchise gaming, taking franchise gaming as deep as it's been in any basketball game ever, probably any sports game ever, Ben. Admittedly, I really just stick to the basketball games, but looking around, I don't think any other game has really had a franchise, possibly MLB The Show, but you know, is probably up there as well. But as far as what My League has done, and of course we give our tip our hat to our good friend Leftos, hi Leftos, about this and all that he's done with his team and Eric Benish and everything like that, all the people involved, it is one of the deepest modes in basketball gaming and gaming in sports gaming in general. It's really been impressive.
Yeah, it has. I know I lightly got the start mine just before I flew down to Victoria and that. So starting to get a feel for the mode and seeing how it all panned out and how deep it was and that. But yeah, from what you know we've seen with it over the years, and that it's definitely grown deeper and more interesting. And yeah, I can see it intimidate a few people who are new to the game and that. But I think once they get their hands on it, I think they could probably see the actual value of it.
And one of the really cool things that has come in over the last couple of years is League expansion and rebranding. It's something that we've wanted to see in the game for years. They've finally been able to do it. But there is a drawback to that, and that's come by way of NBA 2K17, which the servers have just been shut down on December 31st, 2018. So as last year concluded, so did online support for NBA 2K17. We knew it was coming. We knew that roster sharing was going to be down, and draft classes, custom rosters, that kind of stuff, slider sets, that they were no longer going to be available on 2K Share because the servers are not up. But something we didn't count on, which is unfortunate, Ben, is that My League games with expansion teams have become inaccessible after the server shut down, because it seems that a lot of the custom assets are not downloaded to the PC, or they may be downloaded to the PC, but they still require that online connection to the server if you're using that custom content. So any My League games that have used that online content, that being the shared assets for rebranding expansion teams, yeah, they've been locked out of it, including Phil89 in the forum, who has had a great 2K17 story going for the last few years, has suddenly found himself locked out of the save as it's ticked over to 2019 because of this this issue. And I mean, that's just the way it's designed, but it just goes to show that always online stuff is really how it's trying to make games like a planned obsolescence after a while. Like even something that's a single player offline mode like My League, but this has that one online element, it's not downloading enough and letting it be on the hard drive, be a local data. It has to have that online connection, and it's actually locking you out of an offline mode. And that's, yeah, it doesn't say much for the online, always online, and that's why people are so wary of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty disappointing that, you know, for a mode that is supposed to be offline, and you can't access it. So hopefully it's something that, you know, can be ironed out for next gen. I don't think it would get done for this gen and that stuff. I think they might have a way around it for next gen, but chances are they probably won't. They'll probably just probably a way to ensure that people buy the next title.
By the way, this game, yeah, which I mean, look, there's a business side of everything, and to video games especially, that they do need to make money. They do need to keep selling the latest product, so you're not going to support everything forever, but the fact that it is an offline mode is, and that you download the data, I think is what really sticks in people's craw here. And it reminds me of the whole situation, you remember when the NBA 2K14 servers were shut down originally?
Yeah.
And people were supposed to go to an offline version of My Career, but then they got locked out of My Career. Some people, once the servers got turned on again, were able to play it a little bit longer and convert it to an offline save. But I think there really needs to be that option, because some people don't upgrade as much, and some people do continue to play old games, and there is value in retro gaming, and it's something that I think we're seeing less of with this online, always online, and server dependent content. And you brought up Fallout 76, for example. Yep. You know what's going to happen eventually when the server shut down with that, whereas I can go back and I can play Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 and Fallout New Vegas with 76. You know, all other things, all the issues with the game aside, if nothing else, when the servers are offline, you can't play. And it is an online game, so I guess that's sort of the way it goes. But if people want to go back and play that Fallout 76 years down the road when it's no longer being supported or whatever, and traipse around the West Virginia, basically, and go through any campaigns that are still available as a single player, you know, it's not going to happen. Same if you want to go back and play 2K14. You can go back and play 2K14 My Career, because it's all offline now if you start it now. But if you get locked, if you were locked out of your save back in the day, a few years back, that was it. So, okay. I actually need to fire up 2K14 again, because I want to see, because obviously my team won't work. I'm guessing my GM will. It'll just use some kind of other currency instead of the instead of VC. But that is the problem. If you want to pull out these old favorites and play them again, it's getting harder and harder, because a lot of the stuff relies on online content. And if it's a mode that's offline, it just has some online elements, but it's primarily offline, why can't you download those assets and just keep it locked? I mean, fair enough, if you, at this point, you shouldn't be able to connect to a server and get new assets because, well, there's no more online support for the game. But then again, shouldn't you be able to just upload from a local folder and get something like that? I mean, that's, you lose a lot of this functionality in the in an offline single-player mode just because there's an online element.
Yeah, this is, it seems kind of backwards broken in that sort of way. It's like, that shouldn't happen at all. So,
I mean, in defense of 2K, it's not them doing it. They're not leading the way with it. It is the way of gaming at the moment. But again, you do feel a bit dismayed at seeing this. And it seems to be an epidemic with AAA gaming at the moment. And I don't want to get into the whole, indie, you know, almost like an indie music thing and, you know, indie game. Look, I mean, I do enjoy indie games as well, but I don't buy into the whole, AAA evil, indie, perfect, good, whatever. Even though I do obviously like indie games, including, of course, the fine folks at Josh and Dave at Nemo Gamer with Basketball Classics. Naturally, give them a mention here. And support indie gaming and everything. But my point is, I'm not getting on the whole indie always good, AAA always bad, but it is an issue with AAA that's really affecting the industry, and I think it's going to shut down the whole retro gaming, or really hamper the retro gaming hobby, and people who don't want to upgrade so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, they can't have. I'm just thinking back to the whole Xbox One X launch.
Yeah,
and there was the letter or the tweet from the guy who worked on the Nucleus sub and that, and he had no connection. And, you can't have that Don Matrick reaction where, there's a device for you, it's called the 360 and that. You can't be that arrogant and ignorant.
No. And it certainly, I think it cost Xbox in this generation and in the race. I think that response really rubbed people the wrong way. And of course, it was worse for them because they had the competition in the form of Sony and the PS4. 2K, for example, doesn't have, at least in terms of comparable sales, doesn't have the competition as yet because Live isn't there. So they, at the moment, 2K can kind of do whatever they want. It remains to be seen how long that will work, whether the bubble will burst on the industry or whether Live will catch up sufficiently. But it is just a shame. It's a shame that it's happened. But at the same time, I will also defend server shutdowns because fewer people do play the games, and you can't expect people to give support, companies to give support for the games indefinitely when very few people are playing them, and when they do have a policy, we will support it for 27 months, which basically gives you two full seasons plus 3 months into a third. That's pretty good for an annual title, I feel. So I think that's fair enough that it is getting shut down. I just think they should minimize the impact of the shutdown on modes that are offline.
Agree on that. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Just seems that sort of weird sort of thing. Like when you say, when the game is supposed to be an off mode, offline mode, but it doesn't work because it needs that connection. It's like, well, what was the bloody point?
And it locks you out of the save. You can't even choose to go back to some default branding or anything like that. Which, yeah. So I think if you're not using any online assets, you can still play My League or load an old save. But if you have used expansion teams at some point, so it kind of discourages you from, in your main game at least, using a really good feature, because it means that you're going to create a save that you can't go back to. Because I've still got my game from NBA Live 06, my Dynasty game that I've did the thread for so many years, and I've still got that save. If I want to dust it off and play that save again, I can. And there may be people who want to do that and say, I'll go and play my league from 2K17. But if you've done this, you can't. And there's no real warning about it either, that it's going to need that online connection. And I think that's, especially after the 2K14 server shutdown controversy, I'd think they'd kind of learn from that. But they haven't, and I think that's what disappoints. What's disappointing as well is that we've seen this before. We've seen this coming. We've seen the fallout from it, and they actually changed their policy, which was good that they changed their policy about it. But then they've still not had the foresight to do this. And do you remember the response they put out about all good things must come to an end and it's time to retire the seasons and everything. It was the most passive-aggressive PR. it set the tone for 2K's error messages and PR on this generation, basically. And which is why I think they ended up having to go to the 27 months and reopen the servers, although it didn't work properly for everyone, but they had to do it because people said, no, that's probably the worst response you could have given in that situation. Yeah. And you would think they'd learn from it, but I guess at the moment they're just too successful to really care. And it is about the latest game, which is understandable, but it is a shame that we don't have that retro experience of even just a few years ago being able to dust off a game and play it.
Or even like the old memory cards for like PlayStation 1 and 2.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I regret some of the saves. And it's funny, I actually, when I reinstalled 2K17 to do a feature on the College Teams DLC a few months back, I accidentally restored my career save from the cloud, and it was an old one, so I lost all that progress in the My Career save where I got to the second season and everything. And I love my 2K17 My Career, but now I'm back to like December with it and only 92 overall instead of 95 and all the badges and everything, so I'm like, yeah, well, that's a whole thing. So, I mean, I regret it when I lose my old saves. And so it's a shame not to be able to go back to them, but it is what it is, and certainly if that's happened, like it happened to Phil89 in the forum, we certainly sympathize with you because, yeah, that sucks. But understandable that the servers get shut down, but I think they need to handle this a little bit better.
Oh, definitely.
So that's going to do it for the video games this week. We haven't talked about the real NBA for a few shows now, or I guess since we came back in 2019, but we do want to cover a topic this week related to the real NBA. That is of course, the All-Star voting for All-Star Weekend 2019. I think, Ben, I haven't really been following the NBA as closely as I would have liked this year. I felt that there's still a bit of a disconnect for me, I think. I need to really fall back in love with the professional game, which is funny. I've played more on the virtual hardwood than watched the real hardwood this year. But I'm hoping the All-Star Weekend is going to be a good one this year. Again, that used to be one of my favorite events, and I've lost interest for various reasons. But in fact, I haven't actually cast a vote yet, Ben, in this year's All-Star voting.
I'm the same, and I think there's only like about 2 days left, so...
Got to get on it, I suppose, if we want to take part in some respects, in some regard. But we have got the latest returns from the 2019 All-Star voting. The draft will take place on February 7th, so it is getting towards the end of the fan voting, which now accounts for 50% of the starters, the vote towards getting the starters into the game. So we don't have full say anymore, which is good and bad. I mean, there's probably been some bad selections over the years, but at the same time, it is an event for the fans, and the fans usually pick players who are at least generally, you know, worthy of getting there. I'm not a huge fan of the current format, Ben, with the, first of all, by getting rid of the whole two forwards, two guards, two centers. And yep. I think it was worth a try, but I think they've also moved away from it too much, to the point where you can get three small forwards starting, which is just ridiculous when you've got a 7 foot on the other side. Kevin Durant is close to 7 foot himself, so he can play some center in the All-Star game, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course. The other thing that I'm not that happy about is the whole 2-for-1 day.
Yep, I think that's poor.
That is where there's special days. There's been there will be five of them. There's the last one where fans have their votes count twice through all voting platforms. This is rigging the ballot. I mean, in any other kind of voting, that is rigging the ballot.
Inflating numbers.
And so you look at the people who've got 3 million votes or whatever at the moment, and you say, well, how many of them were boosted? It's almost like the league wants to get these record voting numbers, and they couldn't get them any other way except have 2-for-1. It just feels very false. Kind of like the 3-point shootout, how they got the rack of money balls, and a few players have beaten the old Craig Hodges' old record for it. And it's like, yeah, but not until they added the money ball rack. So it feels kind of false and fake and manufactured, basically. But with that being said, the voting is in. Some interesting fan results so far, Ben. In the front court in the East, we've got Giannis Antetokounmpo. No surprises there, the season he's been having and the popularity. Kawhi Leonard and Joel Embiid. And the back court is Kyrie Irving and Dwayne Wade so far. Wade has received about 1.7 million votes at the moment, and people are really showing their appreciation during his retirement tour. It's not just jersey swapping, but also some All-Star voting too.
Yeah, which is nice to see. Like, I mean, I wasn't too sure how. I mean, I was hoping that he'd get a chance to potentially play in the All-Star game for his last year. I wonder how. Just sort of going back to Giannis, is like, I wonder how many votes were from Leftos alone.
Just two for one, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, going back to the original topic. Yeah, like I said, I'm glad to see Wade, you know, getting some recognition in what will be his last ever time to play in the All-Star game. And yeah, so I like the occasional sentimental vote, so I think it's a good thing. And I think we'll come up to another one in just a minute.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And look, you look at his numbers, they're decent, especially because he's only playing 25 minutes a game off the bench.
Yeah.
They're not his best numbers, obviously, having been a multi-time All-Star and great player during his prime. It's not his best year, but I agree there is room for sentimentality in sports, and I think we've lost some of that with so much emphasis on statistics and analytics and everything. Sometimes we forget just the beauty of the sport itself, or the sentiment of the sport and competition and everything that it encompasses. And I guess I'm an old head saying that, but I'll say it anyway. And I agree. It's nice to see. I've got a feeling that maybe the fan vote's going to get overruled by other voting and he may not get in when it's all said and done. He does have a significant lead on Kemba Walker, who's third among guards with 1.1 million votes at the moment, and Ben Simmons at just under a million. But if he makes it in, you know what? I'm fine with that. I was fine with Michael Jordan getting in his final year and Vince Carter eventually stepping aside and so that he could start. I was fine with Tim Hardaway giving up his starting spot to Magic Johnson, even though Magic wasn't even in the league in 92, but he was on the ballot because the ballot went out before he abruptly retired when he announced he had HIV. The fact they were able to do that, and that was such a special game, and that they were trying to give that him a moment, and of course they did. And remember, they called the game with about 40 seconds left when he hit that three, because the game was already pretty much decided, but he hit the three, and they said, yep, let's call the game, because it's such a special moment. He ends with that three-pointer. Who was it? I think it was... somebody stepped aside for John Havlicek in 78 when he was retiring. Doug Collins. I almost said Phil Collins then. Phil Collins, something in the air tonight. No, it was Doug Collins stepping aside so that John Havlicek could start in his final All-Star game. So there's room for those kinds of gestures in sports. And Wade, I think, has been a great player in this league, multi-time champion. He's announced this is his retirement tour. You know, I think it's fine. And if he gets there, some people would say, you know, there might be some people, some purists won't like it. I consider myself something of a purist, but I do like it because I think it does appeal to that sentiment in the sport, yeah. And it's that send-off. I don't know how people can say, oh, it's the All-Star game, it doesn't matter, but then get upset when there's a sentimental gesture like this. It's yeah, weird. Exactly. It's kind of weird how it has that double standard there. I mean, I'm not saying I don't have my own double standards with this kind of thing. Like, I obviously know it's for fun, but I also care a lot, but you know, I'm all for it. And you know, the same thing is, as you alluded to, going on in the West at the moment. Stephen Curry in the backcourt for the West is leading with 2.9 million votes. With 2.7 million votes, Derrick Rose also coming off the bench, but Rose a possible candidate for Sixth Man of the Year, the way he's playing this year. And I think people, you know, before we started recording, you compared it to the Grant Hill situation where they had that sentimental vote in 2005, and yeah. he got in, even though it wasn't his best season, but still a pretty good one. Again, I think if this is the fans who want to see and they appreciate that he's come back from all this adversity, that he's finally having a healthy year and candidate for Sixth Man of the Year, I think he would be the first MVP to win Sixth Man of the Year as well, in fact. So that would be quite an achievement in its own right. And to bounce back from his all the surgeries, all the injuries and everything. And yes, I've got some sentimentality there because it's Derrick Rose and at one time my favorite active player, and Still like him, still wish him well and everything. It's just a bit harder to cheer for him when he's in another jersey, obviously. But again,
he's on the Timber Bulls, so well, was the Timber
Bulls. Yeah, well, they got rid of Tibbs, so they just, you know, they're actually looking to get Fred Hoiberg. He's rumored to be going there. So I mean, so they're just copying off Garpax's exam paper now, aren't they? So
yeah.
but again, it's a sentimental pick to some extent. he's ahead of James Harden and Russell Westbrook, who are having better seasons, admittedly. But if the fans are saying yes, like, give him the nod for what he's doing as a sixth man for the Timberwolves and for coming back, I'm fine with that. And I was fine with Hill, with Grant Hill back in 2005. I don't think it'll be an annual thing. I think it's mostly just an anomaly this season. So again, if he gets in, sure, why not? You know, that's a nice, you know, we get so hung up on the right players starting. I mean, do you remember the 95 All-Star game in Phoenix? I'm trying to remember who the starters were, because Gary Payton and Mitch Richmond were coming off the bench. I think Dan Majerle got in that year, and he was, I mean, Majerle was a pretty good player, but the starting back, might have been Majerle and Sprewell were starting. And you're looking at, that's a pretty good, you know, backcourt as it is, Dan Majerle, yep, and Latrell Sprewell. But coming off the bench, Gary Payton, John Stockton, Mitch Richmond, I mean, who probably you could make arguments that any of them should have started. I think we get so caught up in the idea of the perfect starting five that we just lose all sentimentality. So I'm all for Rose starting if he gets in.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've joked a lot about Rose, especially with regards to his injury and I guess some off-court stuff as well that's, you know, in his personal life and that. But yeah, I mean, he has had a pretty good season in terms of in a sense of a comeback and from all the hardships and stuff like that. So I can see there's some sentimentality again, you know, being the playing factor. And, you know, again, this might be one of the last chances he gets to potentially play in an All-Star game. So, yeah. I mean, I'm maybe not as attached to Rose as say you are in that sort of sense. But
it's a similar situation to Wade, really.
I can see it being like, you know, I'll be fine with it in the end in that sort of sense, personally, in that stuff. Like, yeah.
And looking at the front court is, of course, LeBron, who's leading all with 3.7, just ahead of Giannis at 3.6 million. Paul George is his third at 2.5. Obviously, people liking what he's doing with the Thunder at the moment, with 3.3 million, which actually makes him one of the top five. Actually, I think it makes him third overall in most votes, is Luka Doncic of the Mavericks, the rookie, of course. And people might be saying, oh, well, why? But look at his numbers, Ben. He is averaging 20 points, almost 7 rebounds, and 5 assists. As a rookie, that puts him in the same class as, well, for a matter of Tyreek Evans, actually. But also, for that matter, your LeBrons, your Michael Jordans, your Oscar Robertsons. You know, very elite company at the age of 19 that he's doing that. He's playing quite well for the Mavericks like that. He is becoming a star. He's putting up some really good numbers as a rookie. I don't mind that. I mean,
no, I think you know,
I think it's earned.
I think he's probably one of the most well-rounded rookies we've had in a long time.
And you remember in the early 2000s when we were really wringing our hands at how rookies weren't really putting up big numbers anymore?
Yeah.
And you get LeBron coming along in 2003, 2004, and Melo. People forget how good Melo was early on in his career, of course. And so people were. But for a while there, we were getting rookies that weren't really putting up numbers that were comparable to All-Stars compared to, again, your Michael Jordans in the 80s and Hakeem Olajuwon, of course, and other players who would make it in their rookie years and really having that immediate impact with All-Star numbers. Obviously, you're talking about some of the best of all time in that sense. So, you know, it's a high bar to set. But for him to come in and put up those numbers, Mavericks, obviously, it's not their best season. It is part of the rebuilding process at the moment. They're, what, about 19 and 25 at the moment, I believe. 20 and 25. So they are out of the playoff picture as of this time, probably going to miss it this year. Which is kind of a shame with Dirk Nowitzki being his retirement tour as well. But I'm fine with Doncic making it, and Paul George also having a pretty good year. LeBron is LeBron, naturally. So, looking at the fan voting, my only complaint is, of course, that with the full front court guard system, that we're not going to have two true centers. We will in the East with Joel Embiid as being the third front court player. But that's my only complaint. If it was by position, you could probably have Anthony Davis as the center and starting as well. He's a couple of behind. I'm sure he'll be on the team, just probably not starting, depending on how the fan voting is evened out by everything else. But looking at those players, I mean, yes, you can argue with Wade and argue with Rose because of the sentimentality, even that we supported it, but you can understand the arguments against it. But everything else, that's a pretty fair assessment, I think, of the fans. They've got those players in there. I mean, if you've still got about 7 or 8 players out of the 10 legitimate, sensible selections, 80% is a pretty good strike rate.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I was surprised, like, you know, Harden, I mean, obviously, like, they come in as a reserve in this case, you know, if it was based on the current voting and that.
Yep.
So, you know, it's a surprise considering, you know, he's the current world defending MVP in that sort of sense. But, you know, that does that sort of indicate that he's not as popular as he, say, was? And is it because of a few things like his defense? Is it, you know, the fact that he's just become a three-point shooter, or more of just a three-point shooter and stuff like that?
I mean, or, people, there is a backlash to a certain extent when people get successful, you know. Yeah. And I, as much as I have a love-hate relationship with the word haters, haters are a thing, absolutely. You remember everybody was really high on Dwayne Wade and really liked Dwayne Wade when he had that breakout season in his rookie year and helped the Heat to the second round. Was it the second round they got to that in his rookie year? They got to the playoffs.
I think it was. I think, yeah.
And had a really good performance and everything. And everyone was like, oh, you know, this is really exciting. And obviously an exciting player to watch. But then as he started having success, when he won the championship in 2006 and was the finals MVP, people started to turn. And same when James Harden was a breakout star when he went to Houston from the Rockets, and everyone was saying how what a dumb move it was by the Thunder, and not, you can't say that it was necessarily questionable. Certainly was questionable, I should say. And he is $2.3 million to $2.7 million from Rose, and Rose is getting a lot of nostalgia and sentimentality votes at the moment, so it could kind of be that as well. I mean, obviously Westbrook has got the 2 million votes and is lagging behind the two of them, but I do think people have turned on Harden pretty hardcore. Certainly, I don't think you can see a single Facebook post on it by the official NBA account that doesn't make the joke about James Harden got 2 free throws for this or something. You know, it shows somebody else getting fouled and they talk about James Harden getting the free throws and everything.
Yep.
So I think people have turned on him quite a bit, and makes you think that maybe back in the day they would have turned on the likes of Jordan and everyone as well. I mean, it's kind of cool to hate on the best players and the popular ones. But then, of course, LeBron is probably as hated as he is loved around the NBA. He plays both the hero and the villain, depending on which side of the coin you're on. Yet he still gets it because I think people do, at least even if they don't like him, recognize his talent, which I think is fair. I think that's what they did with Jordan a lot back in the day as well, is that they may not have liked him, especially with what he did to the teams, as LeBron does to teams now, but they still respected him to a certain extent. I think James Harden, with the flopping and with the and things like that, and all the free throws, and maybe his game, the change in the game, as you said, a lot of the threes, and the 1 of 17 three-pointers the other day, which is, I don't care what analytics say, that is really ugly. You know, even if he's scoring that many points, but to miss that many threes, that's a really putrid shooting performance from the outside.
That's when it's like, that's when you have to sort of step back and say, all right, it's not working. Go inside.
And like back in the day, if somebody was 1 of 8 or 1 of 9 from 3-point range, you'd say, ooh, that's a rough night. But when you're allowed to go 1 of 17, 1 of 18, yeah, that's brutal. But Harden is a fantastic player. He and could be an even better player if he cared about defense a little more. But I think he has, perhaps with his play and some of the flopping and maybe even some of his remarks over the time, has driven people away. And you look at Durant being behind Paul George. Durant's a 2-time finals MVP and an amazing player, but I think he continues to make comments on things and rub people the wrong way with some of his remarks and the way he carries himself these days. It's cost him some popularity, and that's just the way you can say that people are being oversensitive or too PC or whatever, but that's the way people say, okay, you can say what you like, but I think what you're saying is dumb and I don't support you anymore, which is people's right as well. So maybe I think you're right. I think maybe it is a little bit of that people can't look past some of those issues at the skill, and so he does lag behind Rose.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But with that being said, we know those are the starting fives. I guess if it was all of the fan voting as of today, The fan voting does only count for 50% to determine the 10 starters. All current NBA players and media panel each account for 25% of the vote, and players may vote for their teammates or themselves. TNT will announce the All-Star starters on Thursday, January 24th, during the TNT NBA tip-off pregame show, and the reserves will be revealed as selected by head coaches still on January 31st, and then, of course, the draft on this February 7th. I still feel that's redundant. You know, I still feel that they could have just kept the old system and just had players give a crap. You know, I don't think it was the format was the problem. It was the players just not playing defense and just standing back. And people say, oh, isn't it spectacular? Not when it's layup lines. You know, Scott Van Pelt pointed it out. It said, when you've got to, you've really got to work hard to make the best athletes, the best basketball players in the world doing incredible things look boring. And yet they found a way because there was absolutely no defense.
And yeah, exactly.
All-Star game, never been big on defense, but it's always been bigger than what it's been the last few years. And I think I want to watch this with an open mind. I really want to get back to that level where I'm really, really invested in the NBA. And I think with some of the things that have happened with the Bulls in recent years, that's really affected me as well. I think I had more interest in other players around the league about 10 years ago. So that even when the Bulls weren't good, I could, or if the Bulls were eliminated from the playoffs or whatever, I could still care about something else.
Yeah.
I think that's been an issue for me. But the thing is, I do still love basketball, and I watch some highlights every now and again. I think, you know, this is why I want to watch. But then you watch the games where they're just launching 43-pointers, 50, 60, 73-pointers between the two teams, and you're like, this is not fun basketball at all. And it's actually gotten to the point, I've got to watch the video, but Coach Nick of B-Ball Breakdown is saying that it may be time for teams to take less threes. I'm like, oh yeah, it's overdue, really. I want to see them take a lot less threes and vary up the offense a little bit. But
well, yeah, even like Popovich has been very vocal about it, you know, saying like, you know, the big men are bored, you know, that there's no real point for them. And
yeah, you know, and people can criticize him. It's like, yeah, you're criticizing someone who has led the Spurs to so many 50-win seasons and 5 championships and 6 appearances. Popovich knows a thing or two about basketball.
Yeah.
They can dismiss Barkley as a hater because, he hasn't won a championship, which is ridiculous logic anyway, but it's a bit harder to dismiss Popovich. But that is the All-Star voting, I guess, and, yeah, it's up to us, I suppose, if we want to tune in, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it a watch. Hopefully I can find a way to stream it without having to pay too much for it. Go to a bar and watch it, I guess. But yeah, it better be more entertaining and enjoyable. Last year's had parts of it. It was starting to sort of get to it.
Mm.
But it was still too much of the last few years beforehand. So
yeah, I tuned out when they started taking a lot of threes again. And then I tuned back in when I saw on social media that it was getting close. So I'll see if I can get a bit more of a chance this year, but we'll see. Playoffs might be different this year because we know at least one team's probably not going to... Well, we know that the Cavs aren't going to make the finals because they don't look like they're going to make the playoffs. So we'll at least have a new Eastern Conference champion, if nothing else. So that's
true.
That's different, I suppose. Will it be the Raptors? Will the Raptors get the monkey off their back? And
well, the Raptors were number one in the East last season.
That's the thing. Yep, they fizzled in the playoffs. So is it going to be another case where they're a great regular season team and not make it to the playoffs? And there's been plenty of teams like that in previous years. Clippers, for example, of late. Supersonics, although they did make an NBA Finals in 96, of course. The Supersonics for many years were always in the mix, but had a couple of disappointing first-round exits as well. The Hawks often has some really great regular seasons and then just fizzled in the playoffs. So it happens, you know. It's a whole different beast, as they've said. A lot of players and coaches have said it, and its results over the years have borne it out. So we shall see, but yeah, maybe the second half of the season I'll get a bit more invested as it heats up and the playoffs turn around and we see some new matchups.
I think one of my only concerns with the All-Star weekend itself is how the other events are going to be as well. You know, will the dunk contest be boring or, you know, just a misfest, or will it, or just, what's the word I'm looking for here?
just tedious and boring, I guess, is some of the contests have been. I mean,
and too gimmicky.
Too gimmicky. Oh, absolutely. The gimmicks I'm not a fan of, especially when they're overused. What I really disliked a few years back when they did the team dunk contest, I thought that was ridiculous. I thought that was incredibly stupid, in fact. So I'm glad they moved away from that immediately. It's like when they did the wheel in 2002. They're like, yeah, that was a bad idea. Sometimes it's worth trying ideas, and sometimes you're like, yeah, that really wasn't a good idea. So scrap that straight away. So I suppose we shall see, and it's just a shame we can't play it very easily in the games as well. I mean, I did play All Star Weekend in my career, of course, because you've got the dunk contest. You don't get to practice the dunk contest beforehand, but that's a whole other topic we discussed before. But but this is why it pays to have a standalone All Star Weekend, because when you get to All Star Weekend, you get hyped up for these events. So it's nice to just fire up the game and play it yourself.
Yeah, you know, because the moment you get into it, chances are you're going to bum the first one, and you're basically out of it from the beginning. You know, as soon as you miss that first one, you're not getting in the top two.
No, not at all. But hopefully the real contest is better, basically. And
yeah,
somebody jumping over a Kia again. We're gonna the roof this time, maybe. So that has brought us to the end of episode number 271 of the NLSC podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, we encourage you to tune in each and every week. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also find us on various podcatching apps, including Podcast Addict and Stitcher. Search for NLSC Podcast, look for our logo, that will be us. Or hey, keep streaming on the NLSC itself, as long as you're tuning in and enjoying it. That is the main thing after all. So however you want to listen to us, as long as you're listening to us, we're happy about that. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter, @TheNLSC. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/TheNLSC. We're on Instagram, NLSC Basketball. And of course, the NLSC itself, nb-live.com, is our website with our forums, all our original content, everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that will do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Andrew.
I'm Arcane.
Go get buckets.